Hello, welcome to our podcast, and today it's book review time. We are looking at a book about suffering, about the presence of God in that suffering, and I'm delighted to say I'm joined by the author of Where the Hell is God, and that's Father Richard Leonard, SJ, Jesuit priest, from Australia. So, where the hell is God? A provocative question, a good question in the face of suffering. And I know you look at natural disasters as well as the key reason for you writing this book. So put it in context with your personal experience.
James, I came to this because 22 years ago, my family suffered a terrible tragedy that my sister was involved in a very bad car accident and became a quadriplegic. And my sister Tracy was one of the most selfless people that I knew. She had done nursing studies after her Catholic education, and then she went to Mother Teresa to work as a nurse for 3 years. And then she came back to Australia and worked with the Aboriginal people in a remote part of the Northern Territory, where she ran the health centre. And it was there this absolutely freakish accident happened when she was being towed, of all things, and she had no other injury, but she broke her neck and crushed a spine. And for the last 22 years, from the age of 28 to 50, she has had to be washed, fed, turned, toileted, and clothed. And it was actually, the title of the book comes from my mother, who on the day that we found out that Tracy was a quadriplegic, the day after her accident, my mother turned to me, a woman who's a mass-going Catholic, goes to daily mass, who's a very, very devout believer. My mother turned to me and said, where the hell is God? And rather than an angry statement, which many people see the title as, I think, when they first look at the book, actually it was just a statement of desolation. And over the last 22 years, I realized that a lot of Christians, a lot of Catholics touch that in their life. And some walk away from faith because people can't provide any decent answers to that question. That at these pivotal moments when we feel most distant from God, I think we have to have something more intelligent to say than it's all a mystery, or some of the other terrible responses. And there were a lot more, there were dreadful responses in letters that we got that followed that accident.
Now we can talk about what I would say is very accessible but very thought-provoking, profound and deep theology in this book. But first of all, what was your answer to Where the Hell is God after Tracy's accident?
Well, I said to my mother that day that if anyone can tell me that God sat in heaven, Mum, and said, I need another quadriplegic and Tracy, you're going to do. Now let's get a car accident happening so that we might have that end achieved. I said, if that's God's part of God's active will, of his direct will and intervention in the world, then I said to my mother, I was leaving the Jesuits, I was leaving the priesthood, I was walking out of the Catholic Church and I was leaving Christian faith because I couldn't love that God, I couldn't serve that God, and I didn't know that God. And my mother turned to me and she said, as only a mother can, to her youngest son, and said, well, seeing you know everything, where is God then? And I said, Mum, I can only believe that God is as devastated as we are right now, holding on to us, weeping with us. And my mother never said a word. But 1 hour later, I heard her on the phone to her closest friend in the world, who happens also to be her oldest sister, my Aunt Mercia. And she said to, Mercia must have said to Mum on the phone, well, how could God do this to you, Joan? How could God do this to Tracy? And I heard my mother say 1 hour later, oh, Mercia, I can't believe in a God who sat in heaven last night saying I need another quadriplegic. I can only believe in a God who is as devastated as we are, crying, weeping with us that this terrible accident has happened. And I was absolutely delighted about that because I'm sure my mother, for her, at that stage, 57 years of her Catholic life, totally and utterly believed in a God who gets you, who sends you down dreadful things just to see how you're going to cope, how you're going to shape up to the next cross that I'm going to send you. And so this book was in response to the fact that following that accident, then we got other responses from people like, you know, Tracy must have done something terrible to offend God and God had to punish her in this life. Some Catholics wrote and said, my ways are not your ways, my thoughts are not your thoughts. But the whole point of the incarnation of Christ becoming, or Jesus becoming one with us in the human adventure, is that my ways are somewhat your ways and my thoughts are somewhat your thoughts. God can't be inscrutable at this, at these moments, although there is obviously a mystery to suffering, and I don't run away from that. And then, you know, one we hear a lot, which we got told a lot, was that we were very blessed because God only sends the biggest crosses to those who can bear them. And alternatively, we got, you know, that we had to offer up our sufferings because Jesus suffered so much, and that there would be a very big divine plan that we'll only find out when we all get to heaven. And all of those were so inadequate for the pain that we were going through, but also inadequate given the theological tradition that we have. And what it says about God, what some of those things say about God, is actually frightening theology. So I want to get really clear, James, that in this book, we're in the area of speculative theology, and the church can't be definitive about where we find God in pain and suffering, and nor am I. I'm not that arrogant. I don't say I've solved the problem of evil and the God of love. But I did want to write an accessible, simple book for people who may have ever touched on that question and gone looking for answers, and good answers, or at least more helpful answers, were few and far between.
But you're right. I have to say that even as Catholics, we ask some of these questions, and we also think we know some of the answers, perhaps even when we haven't examined it in such an accessible way as you have. I mean, we often have the question, don't we, why do bad things happen to good people? And I think you answer these questions in a way that actually is thought-provoking. Sometimes it seems, I read quite a lot of the book and thought, oh, that seems quite obvious to me, or that doesn't jar with me. That's what I feel to be true, and that's the God I know.
I think one of the loveliest responses to this book, and it's become a hit, I'd have to say, and a surprising hit. In Ireland, it's the number one religious selling book at the moment, and in Australia it is, and it's in the top five in the United States right now of best-selling religious titles, and I'm absolutely blown away by the fact that people have picked it up, and I hope it does well here in the UK, not because I want to make the Jesuits more money, but because I do think that this actually matters, that we wrestle with this question, even if people come to very different conclusions to me. One of the things that I did want to say in this book is to talk about God's direct will. I keep saying, you know, God does not directly send pain, disease, or suffering. God doesn't punish us, at least in this life. And the reason I can say that so confidently or assert it, as I say in the book, is in 1 John 1:5, we're told that God is light. In him there is no darkness. And I want to hold on to that because I think an awful lot of Christians and Catholics think that God's like a Harry Potter film, that generally he's good, but every so often he goes off to the Department of Dark Arts and sends down terrible things upon us. And that's very frightening theology when you think about it. So if we believe that there's no darkness in God, then God cannot send cancer, can't send tsunamis, can't kill our kids, and can't do car accidents, because we believe that that's to participate in disorder, destruction, evil, sinfulness. All of those are manifestations of things that would be a part of darkness, and they can't therefore be in God. So that's very traditional theology. So I'm reclaiming, I think, a rich vein of New Testament and strong classical theology, but wanting to apply it now in very concrete and real ways. Some people say the God that comes out of this is more aloof than we're used to, that it's a more hands-off God. But to be honest, I'm passionate about a personal love of God and God's personal love for me and for all of our listeners right now. My problem is that I don't need God to keep directly intervening in my life all the time to feel God personally close. The other point you said, which I'm delighted at the commentary, is that people say that one of the things it does is give a language, give words to what people have believed for a very long time. One woman told me and wrote to me and said, I was mentally cheering page after page because I've not been able to express it in the way that I've been able to here. And I'd have to say this is 22 years of reflection. This book didn't happen last week or 2 years ago. You know, I've been thinking and talking and arguing and sometimes weeping over this theology for the last few years, trying to find a coherent, intelligent response to pain and suffering that could see me be a better pastor as a priest, to be an intelligent Catholic, and somebody who didn't need to deal in cliches when we're in the face of pain and suffering.
Well, I think it achieves that, and I think it achieves that very well. I think what is a great strength of this book, if you like, beyond the theological points that you actually bring to people in this very unique way. I think we're talking some 70 pages. This isn't a massive book, and it's not going to take you days to read it, which I think is a great strength as well.
You can do it in an hour. I've had people have knocked it over in an hour, though I have to tell you that my mother read it, and her first response was that I wrecked her faith. She said, you know, you've wrecked my faith. So if somebody doesn't like it the first time, if my mum's anything to go by, give it another go. She's done it twice now, three times. And in fact, now she found it very helpful on the second and third time. She said, I think it's going to be helpful to a lot of people. And that's because I wanted to write a short book because there's a lot of research. I do a lot of work in Australia in adult education and in theological medical education, and there's a lot of research. The people who are in pain and people who are reading outside their area, so those who'd never pick up a book on religion or theology, will not read over 25 to 30,000 words, that the book just looks too big and it all feels too complex. So I start with the personal story of my sister, and then from there launch into what I hope is an intelligent book, but not an academic book. I didn't write it for theologians, I didn't write it for philosophers, and I didn't write it for academics. I wrote it for people who might have asked that question and have been really searching and struggling to find an answer, or for people that might have be at peace about that in themselves, but have family or friends or children or colleagues or neighbours who might well have walked away from faith over this stuff, and this might be a book they can put in their hands and help. Maybe that helps their life and the journey of faith as well.
Well, it's interesting because from a personal perspective, my brother died at 24, so he's very young. I knew it was coming, and certainly in the last 5 weeks I knew it was imminent. But at that point, and that was before my conversion to Catholicism, it was very odd for me personally, because I didn't ask the question, where the hell is God? I didn't doubt the faith I was heading towards, the reality of God for me. It was really odd. And a lot of the reasons why I felt that way are actually within your book. They're the truths I felt, that not through any academic study of my own or anything like that, but I felt that God had revealed these things to me in the simplest of ways. I felt a reconciliation between my brother and God, and my faith was strengthened. So it's almost the reverse.
I think we can only call that amazing grace. And I don't know enough about your own story, but maybe it's that because you came to Catholic faith as an adult, you're already having very adult conversations with people along the way. Some of us who grew up are cradle Catholics, and say who went to Catholic primary and secondary schools, sometimes some of the answers that were given to these questions were a lot more simplistic. But because we heard them at such vulnerable ages, they stay with us for a lifetime. And so I've had 70 and 80 and 90-year-olds write to me about this book saying, you know, I can't tell you how enlivening I found this, because really I realized that I've still got my grade 6 religion teacher in my head who told us that God sends everything and that God's responsible for everything. And if you don't get better, well, that's just God's will. You have to carry a cross and maybe have to die. And that's the way God wants it. And I come in the book and saying, well, you know, I don't believe, for instance, that God kills us off. We as Catholics don't take the Bible literally until we come to those moments about span of our days and hairs on our head. And then we become utterly literal. Now, it works when you're 96 and we say, you know, of course, in the cricket image, that grandma had a good innings. But one of the things I say is, as a priest, I've done the burial of children, and particularly newborns. You know, I just recently in Australia did the burial of two children. One died on day 9 and the other on day 10. And this is a couple who'd longed to have a child for 13 years and were unable, and then conceived twins, and then both were dead within 10 days. Well, there was no good innings there. And God didn't need another two angels in heaven. I attack that theology in the book because I think it's a tragedy. For all the right reasons, people are trying to be comforting. And we sometimes have said to parents, well, God must have needed another angel in heaven, so he's called your baby home. Or your child was so special and so loving that, you know, God didn't want your baby to be tainted by the world. Well, the problem with that, it's irreconcilable with classic Christian theology, which says God doesn't need anything. God doesn't need our babies, alive or dead. God takes them. God welcomes them. God holds them for eternity. That's a different question. But God doesn't need angels in heaven. God desires us. God wants us. That's a very different statement in Christian theology. And I think we need to say some of the stuff we've tried to say as pastorally caring has done anything but been helpful for some people's life of faith.
Well, these are massive questions, and I'm going to try and follow the lead that you've laid out in the book and keep it reasonably brief. So two final things. First thing, it's quite difficult not to talk about natural disasters. It's something you address. We had Haiti last year and the devastation there. We've obviously just recently had Japan with the earthquake and following tsunami, and you do actually talk about the 283,000 odd people that died as a result of the tsunami some 3 or 4 years ago. Some people are always going to struggle with the natural disaster argument, and why does God let that happen as the first question, aren't they?
I think that firstly, we've got a couple of things that need to be said. That's called natural evil, and there are three different types of evil that we have in the world. There's physical come natural evil, there's moral evil, and there's metaphysical evil. So we don't need to get too technical or heavy, but it is important to make those distinctions. When we talk about when bad things happen in the world, we tend not to make much of a distinction. We tend to focus on moral evil, which are the ones about free will and choice. Metaphysical is this sort of cosmic clash that good God have made a better world than the one we've got now, and I don't even get into that in the book because I just deal with the world as it is. But natural evil, I think God has to take some responsibility for that, in the sense that the world is as it is, and God, I assume, could have made a different world, but chose not to. But when we go to a tsunami or to an earthquake or to flood or to a drought, I've just been through 10 years of drought in Australia, our country has, and then we got a flood. I want to make two points. Firstly, God seems to be the worst meteorologist that I could ever imagine. So, as I say in the book, can we please stop praying for rain? Because God doesn't seem to be very good at this. He doesn't seem to know anything about the mean. We could just have a mean lot of rain, rather than give us a flood after a drought. And the second point is that rather than immediately go to theology, when we ask the question, why did the tsunami happen, rather than move to theology, I think we can move to geophysics in the first instance. And geophysics is going to tell us, well, the earth shell moved. That's actually why the tsunami happened. Now, it does beg the question that God has some indirect responsibility for a world which seems to be evolving, but so are we. So maybe Paul was really onto something in the letter of the Romans when he talked about the earth groaning in one act of giving birth. Just as humanity has morally, personally, spiritually, has evolved as well. And we have no contradiction with our faith and the belief of evolution, both natural evolution and human evolution. So we're happy to concede that. So maybe the earth is evolving too, and the crust and its plates and all of the things that go to make up the world is part of this evolution. So maybe there is a reason for it, and maybe it's important for us not to see that as always the enemy. The other thing, of course, the absurdity is that we know we've got cities on earthquake lines. Now, are we going to pack up San Francisco and Los Angeles and move them? Well, the answer to that question is, well, maybe we should, but we're not going to because it's so unreasonable to expect that we're now too entrenched there. So we have to live with our natural environment as it is, though we are making a decision to actually be in areas which we know are naturally precarious. And then when it happens, we blame God, or we blame God directly. Whereas in the book, I don't let God off the hook completely, but I think it's only an indirect responsibility that God has to take. Otherwise, earth would be heaven, because one of the things we say about heaven is it's perfect. Well, earth's not perfect. It is by definition imperfect. Therefore, it has to have some of the signs, manifestations of imperfection, and that's even in the natural order.
Well, it's fascinating, Richard, but I'd like to actually finish by talking about your sister, Tracy. Let's give the final word there. One thing that I found very, very moving, actually, was the, and this isn't a point of theology, this is just a simple human reaction, when she communicates from her book, that you do draw reference to in this, about simply wanting to scratch her nose or scratch her scalp or having a mosquito near her ear. And, the fact that if somebody else is doing it for you, even if it's a loving mother, you can't quite scratch that scalp as you want to and satisfy that itch. And it's those simple things, and not being able to go to the toilet on your own. And as you said at the book launch, if you'd have asked your sister, well, what would you like back? Where would you like to be able to operate again? And interestingly, it's not the arms or legs in her case, is it?
One of the things that has happened for all of my family as a result of this accident, and certainly for me, is we're just bloody grateful. And to be grateful that you can go to the toilet, if we haven't turned the loo into a house of prayer, we're not serious about prayer. It's not as earthy and as it actually should be and could be. Because honestly, my sister says that rather than get her arms and legs back, from the age of 28 to the age of 50, she has been enemized every second day and has an indwelling catheter. She always says, I would get my bowel and bladder back. And I'd have to say there have been moments where I have gone to the loo on my own and been moved to tears, certainly early on, because I know that that's an experience that she will never have again. And we take all of this for granted. And yet it's the old story. It's not until it's gone that you appreciate how much you've got. And so I have become a more grateful person, and she is an extraordinary woman, and so is my mother. My mother is now 78 years of age, nurses my sister who's 50 at home, And my mother gets up at midnight, 3 a.m. and 6 a.m. every single day and every single night and rolls Tracy from one side to the other. And, you know, Mum wouldn't complain about that and just does it. There's, you know, here's a saint who'll never be canonized. Well, maybe she will be canonized. I shouldn't be so presumptuous. But I might have to become the Pope for it to happen. But I'll have my mother right up there on the list. That said, I think that, you know, it's just making us simply grateful for the things that happen. You mentioned my sister's book. You know, one of the things that her book has now become available in the UK as well. And it's called The Full Catastrophe. And it starts with the day that Tracy arrives in Calcutta and finishes in the week that she had her car accident. And through voice-activated computer, she was able to write this book. And her story is very different. Mine's a theological reflection on what happened to her and subsequently. Hers is simply telling these wonderful stories about what life is like nursing the poorest of the poor in India and in Australia. Interestingly, when I got to the end of that book, it's deeply moving, even if you know how that ends, simply because here is one of the most generous, live-minded girls in the world who went and, in Christ's name, was looking after people who really required her nursing services, and now she's the poorest person I know, and it's got absolutely nothing to do with money. These are the challenges that, between all of our stories which go up to answer the question, where the hell is God? I think it's in fidelity and love and gratitude and forgiveness.
Well, it's a marvellous story, and it's a marvellously accessible book. Just finish by telling us how people can get hold of a copy.
I assume they can go, well, they can go to amazon.co.uk. They can also go to any of the St Paul's bookstores throughout England. But also they can go to, if they put into Google, Columba Press, who are the distributors. It's actually an American title. Paulus Press in New York did this book and also bought out my sister's book. But Columba out of Dublin are the distributors for Ireland, the UK and Europe of all the Paulus titles. And so The Full Catastrophe and Where the Hell is God is at their website as well.
Well, it's a marvellous book. I would say definitely go out and get it. Father Richard Leonard, thank you very much.
James, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me.